A big thank you to Penny Boshaw, who took the class the last 3 weeks while I've been gone. She said she really enjoyed it, and I am super appreciative of her that she was able to do that. Good, good. I think she has family around or company. I saw her in early service, but I think she has company today. So we just get to wrap up today. But before I start, I've been asked to introduce these two young ladies in the back. We have on my left is Miranda, and to her right, on my right, is Liz. And they're both Martin Luther College students, and they're here to help out with Tree of Life Bible Camp this week. And then they're sticking around, and they're going to be helping teach at our Vacation Bible School the week after that. Bible Challenge leaders, right? Someone's the Bible Challenge leader, and someone's taken on a chunk of the pre-K kindergarten, right? Excellent. So no, we're really happy to have you. Welcome. So let's just dive in. Today is encouragement to everybody. We've had a lot of, 1 Peter has been all about focusing. We have this, just a quick review. He's writing to these people from the early Christian church. Nero's beginning to be in power. They're going to go through some horrific persecution, and this is just a letter of comfort. And we get a lot of that again with chapter 5. So this is one of the easier sections, I think, as I was studying for it. It's just a whole lot of comfort. There's not a whole lot of doctrinal meatiness that we have to get through. It's just, I found myself reading from the People's Bible, and if you can get your hands on the first, it's a bunch of books all together, but the Peter is part of those, the books of Peter. I found myself reading Jeske's notes, and I'm nodding the whole time through. He's got some really, really good stuff. I photocopied his stuff, and I'll read some of it for you today, too. But his notes on today's section are super comforting too. So let's just start in. On chapter 5, he starts off to elders and young men, except he's really talking, especially as he gets past verse 4, to the church as a whole. So he talks about leadership just a little bit at the beginning, and then he's talking to all of us, and he brings in the comforting words of the picture of the Good Shepherd. So the focus of this is he wants the church as a whole to live as God's flock, and that's kind of what we're talking about today. Miss Penny was telling me that the way she did it is she had some people reading the Bible verses, and then she would have people read the notes from the sections, and there's some good stuff in here. So if we can do it that same way, I'll borrow her model, because she said it worked well. So if you don't feel comfortable reading, that's okay. We'll just skip right over you. Did she have you do paragraphs for the commentary? However, okay, that sounds good. In the Bible. That sounds good. So let's first focus on verses 1 through 4 of chapter 5, and then we will turn our attention also to these notes from the Bible study notes, verses 1 through 4 there too. Can I start with you?
To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder, a witness of Christ's sufferings, and one who also will share in the glory to be revealed. Be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, serving as overseers not because you must, but because you are willing, as God wants you to be, not greedy for money, but eager to serve, not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away.
Thank you. Those verses, before we get to the commentary notes, these are words that are used in the installation and ordination rites for pastors, because it's such good guidance and such good comfort for these new pastors who are being sent out into the field, is that they will use these exact words from 1 Peter often in their installation and ordination rites. Let's start with the notes then. If you would just take a paragraph, or if you don't mind taking the whole thing, that's okay too, but paragraph by paragraph is okay with me.
Are we looking at that? Paragraph, page 31.
Yes, okay. Peter now turns his attention.
Okay. Peter now turns his attention to the church as a whole and to her leaders. Christians were headed for some very difficult times, and good leaders would be essential to keep the flock together. It's no mere coincidence that Peter calls to mind the picture of a shepherd with a flock. The people of the day understood the need for good shepherds to lead the sheep to safety. Peter is calling to mind Jesus' description of himself as the good shepherd, in contrast to the bad shepherds, similar to the contrast described in Ezekiel 34. These leaders have been given a special measure of blessing and are being exhorted to use that blessing in a manner consistent with being a Christian. Follow Christ's example of shepherding. This position isn't about personal gain. Rather, it's about serving. It isn't about lording over. Rather, it's about ruling in love as Christ rules. It's about being a Christ-like example to the entire flock. When your shepherd appears, when you see him in heaven, you'll have the crown that never fades. Unlike the earthly Olympic crown made of living foliage which faded within days, Christian leaders too need to keep their eyes on eternity rather than on temporary earthly enticements.
Thank you. So now in this study, if you'll flip to the first couple questions, we can cover 1, 2, and 3, but we'll spend time on each of them. With number 1, I think she answers this one in the notes that Ellie just read. In this last section of the letter, why does Peter turn his attention to the church as a whole? They're one group. They're going to need each other.
It's because of the difficult times, the good leaders are essential to keep the flock together.
Yeah, yep. Because they're just now on these beginnings of these waves of persecution. And so Peter knows they're going to need each other. They're going to need some strong leadership, too, to help guide them through all of this. So, yes, he's turning to his church as a whole. But he's beginning in number 2. Where does he begin? He's beginning with this specific group of people that he's going to talk about for a few verses. So where does he begin? With whom does he begin speaking to? Yes. Yes, the elders. And I find this fascinating because he's Peter, right? He is kind of the head of all of this. And yet in verse right away, he says, to the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder. He views these elders of the congregation as his equal. And so he's not, I am Peter. It's like, I am Peter, one of you. And I think that he sets a really nice tone right away for how this early Christian church is going to move forward.
That was probably really important for them too, because from where they came from, the priestly class considered themselves so elite. It would probably be very simple for the leaders of, you know, their new church to think that that would be acceptable as well. Or if not, they might think, well, I knew Jesus when he was alive.
Sure.
It's easy to feel like, well, I've been in here longest.
Sure.
So that you would have a higher status. And that's exactly what Peter didn't want there.
Yes.
It's better to start now when they're brand new.
When they're young.
That's not right. And rather than wait until later when it's already become, when they already have their own Pharisee class again.
Sure. Yeah. He's setting the tone early with them. So then what can we learn from the instructions to the elders? And I guess Jesky makes a point about being an elder, and we see this in congregations throughout our synod too. To be an elder, to be a leader in the church, it doesn't necessarily mean age. But there are 3 points that you want your elders, your leaders to be, and they need to be, they have to have some experience, some training, and to be respected. And so those are some of the qualifications for this early Christian church that we see. So I kind of answered A already about the qualifications of our leaders. But I wanted to add to that too. Yes, your elders are experienced, trained, respected individuals. But in the same section, he's also calling them shepherds. And just think how a shepherd works. Does he drive his flock or lead his flock? rhetorical, right? Yeah, a gentle shepherd leads. Yes, you're right. So then, if he's calling them elders, and he's calling these leaders to be shepherds, now apply that to the work of a leader in the early church or our church, you know, because we can apply these words to us today too. Leader, just apply those two thoughts into what we would like our leaders to be also.
We should expect them to set an example, not to be perfect, of course, but that we should support what they do, you know, try to follow their example as much as we can and just treat them with respect, that they should try and lead their lives the way that, kind of like the, almost the same as the love your neighbor as yourself, but kind of if you expect them to treat other people well, then you need to treat other people and teach them well as well.
Yeah. Yep, you're right. You can jot that down if you're a writer. That kind of answer is B, too.
I think having an attitude of being a servant, like she's talking, or they're talking at the mm-hmm. end, it's not a lording over, but it's serving for the benefit of the group.
Yeah, yep. Jeske makes a point, when you're thinking about the work of a shepherd, the shepherd's job is to make sure that these sheep are fed, protected, and guided. And so if our leaders are able to feed you with the word, protect you and guide you, that's good advice for them to follow. It's a good thing for us to look for in our leaders too, if we are being fed, protected and guided. And yeah, it's the servant heart too. And you had some good points, Amy, about how we as lay people should regard and treat them. And we can even think of it this way. You don't have to answer it out loud if you don't want to, but how can we as members of our congregation help make our leader's job easier? Which I think you touched on with just attitude and loving and, but.
Yeah, that comes with support.
Yeah.
Prayer is that they have her mm-hmm. praying for them.
Yeah, yes. Prayer is powerful.
And hugs.
Yeah.
And thanks. And gratitude.
Yeah. And with letter C, then what can we learn from these instructions to the elders about the heavy responsibility this position carries with it?
Almost sounds like they need to be perfect. I know they can't, but
right.
They have a big responsibility to be in order and stable, mm-hmm. you know, and not, and it's a good example.
Yeah, yes. I added to that, I have that, and then I also added, you know, Peter's focus, this whole letter has really been on focusing and taking the distractions away, and so I added to that, Christian leaders need to keep their eyes on eternity rather on the temporary earthly enticements. Because it's easy to get caught up for any of us, congregational leaders, women, family, whatever, to get so caught up with what's going on around us, but then to keep our eyes focused on eternity is the priority. Do you have any questions on verses 1 to 4? If not, let's take verses 5, 6, and 7 from the Bible. And Beth, will you start with verse 5?
Young men, in the same way be submissive to those who are older. All of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, because God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble.
Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you.
Thank you. So when you think of being humble, and or the word humility, what comes to your mind with those words?
Being
boastful.
Yeah.
I think somebody who's really committed to serve, whether it's a parent or a teacher or just somebody who's doing what needs to be done without asking for anything or any praise in return.
Sure.
Put others before yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's turn to, let's turn to back to the study notes from our study guide. And could we take these couple paragraphs? Let's start with the words from chapter 5, verse 5a first.
Younger men seem to need a specific warning and call to submissiveness. Is Peter remembering his own less than submissive days while Jesus was still on earth? Who was the one who said Jesus should never suffer and die? Who seemed to have a real hard time understanding that God's means of salvation were not going to be easy for Jesus? Young men tend to pull out swords and try to become the alpha wolf. Christians of all ages need to learn submissiveness to the Father's will.
Thank you. And then can we take the notes also for 5b through 7? That takes us to the top little part of the next page, too.
Peter now turns his attention to all Christians. Humility, a detested quality among the Greeks, is a mark of being a Christ follower. Humility is opposite of being proud. Humility is recognizing that we all have and that all we have and are is a gift from God. Moses referred to himself as the humblest man in the nation. Why? Because he was more aware of anyone else how powerless he was, how powerful the Lord is. The proud want to take credit in some way for whatever good occurs in their lives.
Recognize that you don't control what suffering comes your way, nor can you control when that suffering will end. God himself will lift you up and sustain you in his time. Whatever worries and cares you have, and we all have plenty of them, let the powerful Creator God and Lord take care of them. When these worries and cares have served his purpose, they can.
So question 4 takes us here, and I have a bunch of offshoot questions with it too, because a lot of people use verse 7, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. That's a passage that a lot of us go to a lot to just find comfort in. Question number 4 asks, why is humility so important among Christians?
We shouldn't think we're better than everyone else.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not that bad because I didn't kill someone or do this or that, but I'm doing all the time too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like you said about Moses, he was more aware of anyone else how powerless he was, how powerful the Lord is. So God's given us everything. We're so powerless.
Yeah, yep.
No, they just say kind of the same thing. We need to be in that place and let God do what he's going to do, not try to hang on and think we're going to do it all. Be in that humble position. Okay, Lord.
Yeah. And we're going to touch on that exact thing in just a minute, too. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes.
And that was the example that Christ gave in his life. That was his whole life was, again, being a servant, being humble in his position, never ran around saying, I'm God, look at me, nothing like that. He lived in very simple circumstances. And if you are humble in your person, it is easier to reach out to others. If you walk around saying, I'm so wonderful, people don't really want to have anything to do with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now, we talk about being humble, but then what are the challenges of having this humble attitude in the sinful world that we live in? If you want to talk about that with somebody next to you before we talk about it as a group, that would be we'll do that. Let's take a minute or two. Talk about what are the challenges of having that humble attitude while we live in the world that we live in. Just to get you going, I think today's world is a lot like the Greeks from before. Where did you read it? Humility, a detested quality among Greeks, is a mark of being a Christian follower. And I think that there are times where humility is looked at as a sign of weakness today too. So there's just a jumping off point. Talk about some of the other challenges that having that humble attitude, what are you going to run into? We'll get back together in a minute.
You have the answer.
I do. No, but that was the first one that came to my mind. Yeah. How it's look, if you don't show your strength in the boardroom, if you don't.
Exactly. You're looked on as being weak.
Yeah.
And they kind of walk all over you.
Yeah. Or voice your opinion for this, or have the ideas.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I was trying to think of. There aren't a whole lot of negatives about being humble, though, except for that. In the world, that would be one of them. But I couldn't really. I was having a hard time trying to think of stuff.
Sure.
So I didn't really think of any of
that. That's good. You don't have a frustrated mind, though. You're frustrated.
Oh, either that or I just can't think.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, I think the main thing is just being an example to others, you know, because someone who's kind of out there and, you know, they're not always, or the other person is always going to take, like, it's like she said, they're not going to listen to you or take your advice here too, if aggressive. So being humble, I think people tend to stop for a second.
But
that's the that's not the challenge. That's the positive.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a hard question.
It is kind of.
Wasn't
yeah. Were you able to come up with other challenges? And if so, are you willing to share them?
But not necessarily.
Maybe you didn't think of other challenges.
Well, I think there's that mentality today that you gotta look out for number one, or who's going to, or just this, you gotta keep up with everybody, or I don't know, just and that just you just put all the people put all the pressure on them on themselves for achieving what they think in this life is important. And I said too, sometimes it's hard because you know that that's not how God's intention for how you should live, but then you see people around you who seem to be operating that way and their lives seem so great, and why it's not, you know, it makes it hard to live how you know God would want you to live, keeping that humility and keeping him first when it seems like that's not completely not the way of the world.
Yeah.
It's not the way the world would view success.
Yep. Go ahead. Were you gonna say something?
Oh, yeah, I actually did think of something. I think the challenge in itself is just trying to be humble in the world, you know? I mean, because the world puts a lot of pressure on you not to be, so that in itself is a challenge.
And then to add to that challenge is the, look how humble I'm being, thus bringing pride on yourself because I'm thinking I'm being so humble.
Right. That makes sense.
Oh, no, it's just a reminder. I read this and I just get this nudge that I just need to keep reading the Bible, because that's where I need to do a better job of it. That's where I will get the encouragement. That's where I will get my mindset, and I just need to be in it. To focus then in on especially verse 7, that cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. In what way do cares often stand in the way of humility? You touched on it before. In what way do cares often stand in the way of true humility?
It's our nature to want to solve our own problems. I can take care of that.
Yeah.
And we set out to do that. And the more we try, I think God knocks us back a notch or two and reminds us, you're not going to take care of this. I'm the one who will do it.
Yeah. So he says it once in verse 5, all of you, clothe yourself with humility, and then just to go back to verse 7, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. So why is the casting of all our anxiety on him an act of humility?
It's kind of because
you're letting go.
We have to let go of it, give it to God, and know that in the meantime, you know, then you have that question, well, what do I do in the meantime? Because I still have trouble, I still have worry, I still have problems, and I'm giving it all to God and know that God will end this when he's got that grand master plan and he knows exactly when all of this will end. He says it in his due time. Did that come out yet or not yet? Oh yeah, that he may lift you up in due time. And he knows that due time, and he'll still strengthen us and protect us. I read this quote. I like these two quotes. First, the one, they're not biblical quotes, but I like them anyway. The one speaks to humility. It's just a quick prayer. Lord, empty me of me so I can be filled with you. I like that one. And then I think about like the problems that we face too. And then I read this quote way back when, but I like this one too. The will of God will never take you where the grace of God will not protect you. I like that one too.
That's right.
But just to touch a little bit more about verse 7, anxiety is worry over things that we just can't control. And so let's get back to the people you were talking with before. In a very practical way, how do you cast your anxiety on God? You can get together with your groups. If you need, like I will just, I'll give you one of mine to give you a starting point. If I'm super troubled, I just have to tell myself, breathe and pray. And my prayer is always, Lord, just still my heart, quiet my heart, quiet my mind, and just let your will be done. And that's all I know how to pray when I'm super troubled. But that one helps me, just to breathe and pray that, quiet my mind a little bit, Jesus. And so yeah, if you'll just make a quick list on different things that help you to be able to cast your cares on God, because I hope that we can come up with a list where we can help encourage each other. Maybe there are things that others do that we could help incorporate into our lives. So take about a minute or two, and then we'll talk about some of the ways that you use.
Praying is the obvious one.
Yeah.
But it's so funny that we're talking about this because it, over and over again, it happens to me. I'm trying to solve a problem. And then finally I'm like, I'm so stressed out over it. And finally I'll just go, okay, Lord, it's in your hands. I gotta let it go.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're gonna fix whatever way it goes, right? And every single time, like, the same day or the next day or whatever, you know, an answer arrives. And it's so funny because it just happened recently. I mean, I have a great example. We own a townhouse and we rent the rooms. And there, since January, only two of the rooms have been rented. And now the second one, a guy's moving out. And I've been trying to rent the other room since January. And now this other guy, so it's two rooms, so we're losing more money.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's costing us a lot of money to subsidize that house, right?
Sure.
And I've been advertising and haven't gotten anybody, you know, and everything. And finally, yesterday I was like, okay, Lord, I got to stop worrying about this, you know. Whatever, it's in the past, you've always come through, you know. Something's always happened. And sure enough, yesterday, this happened yesterday, I got like five responses to my ad.
Kidding!
Good responses, not, you know, scams and stuff, you know? So it was like so funny that we're reading about this right now.
Yeah.
Because it just, you know, a very obvious one happened. But, I mean, you know, there's a lot of times where things aren't that obvious either, or it might not. The other thing is, things don't always go the way you planned, you know? You know, we plan to do such and such, and it went a different way. It always ends up being better, you know, and stuff.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. It's just really funny.
I, yeah.
Coincidental.
Oh, you have that. Yeah.
know, that happens all the time, too.
Good.
So funny. Yeah. You know, we'll be talking about discussing something, we'll come to church and the sermon will have that subject matter in it, you know, whatever the issue. Yeah. Yeah, it's really funny. Prayer. I think too, just getting together with in a Bible class like this, talking.
Yes,
another outlet where you can kind of let out your anxiety.
Yeah,
just talking about it.
Yep.
With a Christian, other Christian friend or whatever.
Sometimes it helps to know you're not all alone.
Yeah, you're not the only one that has the same problem.
Yeah,
stuff like that. Yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah. So what were some of your ideas? Do you have routines that you do, favorite Bible passages that you turn to, prayers that you say? What were some of your ideas that you had for others?
I always just think of that there's always a reason for everything that happens, and know, like, I just need to let myself go and know that whatever does happen, you know, it's going to be for a reason, and God will always take care of me. So I just always have to, you know, step back from everything that's going on. I just think of that.
That's a good one.
I always think God's in control of whatever, and we don't know why he does things, but...
Yeah.
We both agreed that we're not very good. I said it sometimes takes something so blatantly out of my hands, out of my control, to really just like shake me and make me realize. You know, I have a wall hanging next to it. It's Jeremiah. I know the plans I have for you, the plans to prosper, not harm you. And you can't always see that in the moment, but just to remember that promise. That sometimes it'll take a while, but I think that it will work out, and it will be for your good. Just give it to him.
Well, that's what Peter says right here, and it's the words I keep ignoring. In due time.
But I want it now. Give me patience, Lord, but do it now.
Yeah.
I like the Psalm verse, be still and know that I am God.
Yeah.
You cannot hear God, you cannot listen to God, you cannot hear and listen to anybody around you if you do not stop.
Dad.
When you're in that fervor of go, 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 you also get to the point you stop breathing. Not like you breathing too. I say that to my principal a lot. Just breathe. You know, because you get to that point that when you're so anxious, you essentially stop breathing correctly. You do shallow breathing. Your heart rate increases. Your whole body just gets out of whack because it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And so, and you cannot but do anything but, you know, be still. Because when you're still, you're not doing all that other stuff that gets in the way of where you should be.
Yeah.
So the be still and know that I am God. And that kind of says, it's two things. It's, you got to stop, and you got to listen, and you got to pay attention to what's supposed to be happening in the way God wants it to be. But, and know that I am God. I am in control. It goes back to what Carolyn said too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, God is in control. But when we're running around like crazy, we're not stopping to hear that or listen to that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will redirect. Like, I have a very hard time stopping. I'm always moving. So I try to take that energy and redirect it at something that I hope would be God-pleasing, like serving others or helping someone in need or doing something to help me take count of all of the blessings that I do have. And regardless of what is causing me anxiety or issue, it's still... in most cases, I suspect, minor in comparison to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes to get to that point of being still, you really do need to have a good cry or a long walk or exercise of some sort to get to the point where you can be still, because just to say, I'm going to stop and be still, and you're still, you know, you need to get it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a physical thing. So... and there's homeopathic remedies for stress, and, you know, do something that can get you to the point to be still, to focus on what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, there are some things you can do physically.
Yeah.
I think, too, of the group, your social network, your friends, your Christian sisters, they're the ones you call upon. I mean, we ladies tend to like to talk. And so we're going to call upon a friend, and I have this issue. And then you're getting Christian feedback, and you're getting someone who's going to nod and, you know, rub your shoulder and say, it's going to be okay, we'll get through this. Mm-hmm. So I think we're important to one another.
I think that's one of the things that I really like about occasionally doing a women's study, is that we share with each other. I don't know about you, those of you who have a husband, but if I share an issue or a problem, I get told what to do and how to fix it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be told what to do and how to fix it. I just want you to listen, or you know, or just be a sounding board, because often the solution is not going to happen. That's not how it works. But you know, because men are very job and problem solving. Immediate, you know, you just do it. It's black and white. And we tend to be more on the emotional, on the feeling side, and care more about, you know, okay, think through all the ramifications of this, and at the end result will be, and which is why we need each other. It's why we need sisters.
Yeah.
And too, to take something off of ourselves. Like, sometimes we think about our own burdens, and then we socialize when we're with other women, or people make you realize they have a problem too. Let's think about them for a while.
Or you find out you're not alone.
You find out you're not alone.
I thought I was the only one who felt this way. Oh no, everybody else does too. There's comfort in that.
I like the idea too about serving others, because when you take the me out of it, the anxiety goes away. I mean, you can't always do that with really bad things, you know, that you have, if you have issues that are really bad. But I mean, a lot of times if you just start thinking about others, you stop thinking about yourself, and that anxiety, you know, as you realize.
For me, one of the things too is sharing and listening to other people's problems. Oh, thank you, I'll keep my own.
Yeah, that too.
That's so bad.
Yeah, mine are not so bad.
Do you still have
the one to trust in the Lord with all your heart verse? At the end it says, in all your ways acknowledge him, he will direct your path. So if you want your path directed by the Lord, acknowledge him in everything you do. That's just my
thought. Yeah, no. I love that.
Every little thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that list. Thank you. Thanks for sharing all of that. We get on to, I know my kids have had 1 Peter 5:8 as a memory treasure Bible passage to learn multiple times throughout each school year. Just one of the, and Cast Your Anxiety too, that one also. Yeah. But this section just is, we teach our kids these from little on. Let's just go with verses 8 and 9. No, let's take 8, 9, 10, and 11. We'll talk about it. And we'll talk about 8 and 9 first. I can't remember.
Okay.
Thank you.
Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour.
Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that your brothers throughout the world are undergoing the same kind of sufferings.
And the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast.
To him be the power forever and ever. Amen.
So just thank you. Going with just verse 8 for a minute. Be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. If you'll just give me a minute of your time, I want to read you some of Jesky's stuff from the People's Bible, because this is where I just started to nod. He asked some of these questions. Do you wonder why your life is often a struggle? Do you wonder why your problems don't just evaporate even though you go to church and pray? Do you groan because of the carelessness, lovelessness, or recklessness of people in your family? Do you wonder why you still find certain sins so fascinating even when you've been burned by them before? Well, says Peter, wake up and realize what you're up against in your life. You have a fearsome enemy, one of the greatest of the spirit world, a dragon whose spiky tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky, that is, seduced other angels to join his rebellious conspiracy. Revelation 12, verses 3 and 4. What a dreadful thought. This evil, worldwide, powerful spirit is committed to dragging you off to hell, too. But stand firm in that faith and remember that as you suffer, it doesn't necessarily mean there's something wrong with you. Remember that your brothers and sisters in faith all over the world are suffering too as they wait for Christ to return and create a new heaven and a new earth. The same God who called you to eternal glory through the gospel will not let your sufferings go on 1 minute longer than he allows. And he already has his plan of relief ready to go. From God's point of view, your sufferings last just a little while, for at just the right time, our loving Father will come with strength and restoration. He will make the hurtful times serve you and the church by making you strong, firm, and steadfast. And you, in turn, will be a good counselor for other people who struggle. Just think about the Lord's promises of restoration leads Peter to burst into another doxology of praise. To him be the power forever. I just couldn't say it any better than Jesky does. He just did such a good job. That's from the People's Bible. I know we have them in our library. You might have your own personal copy. It's really good and comforting. I couldn't say it. I couldn't come up with a better way to say it. So then, just taking... I'm going to skip question 6. Satan is the accuser. It was just a confusing question to me. Just exactly who is the accuser accusing and of what is he accusing him? So Satan is the accuser, but I just kind of want to apply these verses a little bit more than that. So number 7, how do verses 8 and 9 apply in our lives? The early Christian church at this time, they heard Satan roaring. These persecutions were coming through, and there were these bloody things of martyrdom happening, and Satan was roaring at them.
Well, we have all kinds of... We're not being persecuted and murdered and all that, but we have things tempting us. We have, you know... Hollywood out there making their movies and shows that are not good, and you know, all kinds of things like that tempting us. So
yeah,
I think we have to be alert and watch.
I think the things, like Donna said, the things that we have to deal with are way more subtle, and it's the mm-hmm. subtle stuff that can do you in.
It's the sneakiness. Mm-hmm. He is not silent, but he can be so sneaky and tear things down bit by bit, layer by layer, and mm-hmm. yeah.
And pretty soon, you're the frog in the pot. Mm-hmm. You've been boiled.
Yeah.
I will come back.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have spoken when you were talking. I made you forget.
Right. I feel like the things that we believe in are being played out by the media now is very intolerant. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's just going to get worse and worse. And we can either go the way of tolerance and the way our world is going, or we can hold firm, and it's going to get harder for us, I think.
Yeah.
We're played out as being intolerant, and yet they're intolerant of our beliefs, so it's kind of
right.
But I think that they're more popular, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
As we remember how... Peter is talking to all Christians at this point too. If we can go back to the study notes, but I want to go to the section that starts, it's a few paragraphs down. The paragraph I want to start with in the notes is under chapter 5, verses 8 and 9 on page 32. And I'm like two-thirds of the way down the page. If we can go to the paragraph that starts with the meaning of this passage became much clearer when we think of lions hunting. I guess I had never thought of it in this way before. The Bible study author's notes, they were really fascinating to me a little bit. So if we can read those paragraphs and take it through the top of 33, that would be fantastic.
The meaning of this passage became much clearer when we think of lions hunting in Africa.
It's not so much the hunting skill of the lion as the prey the lion targets. That seems to be the focus of Peter's warning. Roaring lions, most often the males, don't do much killing. They rely on the silent females to single out the young, the old, the weak, or injured. Those who can't quite keep up. Those who are distracted by the greener grass. In short, those straying from the herd for one reason or another.
In this context, then, when Peter calls to resist him, stand firm in the faith, because you know that your brothers throughout the world are undergoing the same kind of sufferings, I hear him encouraging me to stay with the herd and know it's a large herd which will provide safety. I also hear him saying, don't run away from this enemy. He's trying to scare you into much worse danger. Stand and face him. He's like a male lion, all roar, waiting for lionesses to make the kill for him. James, the brother of Jesus, encourages believers with similar words. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. It's also no mere coincidence that the evil one is here referred to as the accuser. We need to ask, who's he accusing, and of what?
I actually never thought about it from the lion's point of view with all of that before. Mm-hmm. Going back to question number 8, so why and how do we stand firm against the accuser, Satan?
I think Jesus did it pretty well. He would just say, God says.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it also says to stand firm in your faith and know that your brothers throughout the world are undergoing the same kind of suffering. So I think just knowing that you're not the only one,
yeah.
If we all hold together,
mm-hmm.
and attending church, attending Bible class together, that's part of it,
yeah.
doing that.
Yeah, staying focused. It's his theme of this whole book. Mm-hmm. It comes out again here, too. And ultimately, it was touched on before, we have God on our side. We can go with these words from James, resist the devil, and he will flee from you, because we have God helping us, empowering us. He's on our side.
One thing that just lightly struck me, maybe it's not completely what Peter was meaning, but when he says that your enemy, the devil, or it can be translated as accuser, but also the adversary, is that's one of the churches I went to used more that that translation or meaning of devil and Satan. And when he mentions the roaring lion looking for someone to devour, I almost wonder if he's alluding to some of the persecutions that they can expect, that that was a favorite thing back then, is throw the Christians to the lions. So he knows that not only, you know, from a spiritual position, that they will face a lot of challenges and they will be attacked, but also they will literally have physical, literal, you know, the people in authority who are their adversaries, who want to eat them up, spit them out, and literally throw them to the lions.
There are other, not this Bible study, but there are other Bible studies that I studied for this one that make that comment too. Yep, along those same lines.
I think we also need to remember that as Christians, we're going to be, I mean, the devil doesn't need the unbelievers. He's already got them. So he works on us because he's trying to do that little picky at you, that subtlety, that stuff that begins to undermine what should be the strong foundation we're standing on, but he starts trying to chip away at it. And sometimes, you know, it, like I said, it's, sometimes it's not the really big stuff. It's all that little stuff that just keeps building up.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really notice it. Oh, well, okay, I can live with that. And then all of a sudden we're at a point where, whoa, time out. I can't live with that. That's not okay. How did we get here?
Yeah. I'm thinking of, like, you miss a Sunday of church. And then the next Sunday, I'll miss another Sunday. And then pretty soon you're not here at all.
Mm-hmm. It's easy to get out of the habit. Mm-hmm. We read verses 10 and 11, all kinds of comfort in those verses. And then I'm going to lump 10 and 11 also with, let's do those final greetings. If we can just take it to the very end of the book now.
With the help of Silas, whom I regard as a faithful brother, I have written to you briefly, encouraging you and testifying that this is the true grace of God. Stand fast in it.
She who is in Babylon chose to gather with you, sends you her greetings, and so does my son Mark. Greet one another with a kiss of love. Peace to all of you who are in Christ.
Thank you. So let's meld those final greetings, and we'll also take verses 10 and 11 for question number 9. What words of encouragement do you see as Peter closes his letter out?
I believe.
Yes, and they're talking about the churches in Rome at that time, just a metaphor for the Roman congregations
yes.
there.
Mm-hmm. Saying that they're here for you too.
Yes, yes.
Does anybody know when he says, and so does my son Mark? Does anyone know, is that a son, or is he just...
He's talking about Mark, John Mark.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
oh.
Yep, the one,
okay.
He accompanied him on a missionary journey,
okay.
And then the author of Mark, too.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's the disciple.
You know, not an actual son.
True, yes. Yes, I see, too, encouraging you and testifying that this is the true grace of God. Stand fast in it. Jesse makes a point about the end of verse 14. Greet one another with a kiss of love. This was, he said, especially in the early church, that openness for these early Christians was a really welcoming thing, and they really embraced it, and you see it in churches today too. They're looking for an openness, a caringness. Greet each other with a kiss of love, just an encouragement to be welcoming and love one another. It's a neat way to, one last encouragement before he ends the book. Peace to all of you who are in Christ. Now I lost my questions. I'm all over the place here. Oh, let's go with question number 11. How was the study of 1 Peter helpful to you in your Christian life? You can even cover some of the lessons that, you know, if something jumped out at you at one of the weeks that I wasn't here, you can still bring it up. So anything that helped you throughout our study. For me, it was just this, I liked the call to focus. Take away the distractions, take away the unimportant. Focus. That was a good reminder for me.
Mm-hmm. And that the things that happen to us or that we get embroiled in this world are temporary. They will come to an end. We just stay the course.
If I can just end our Bible study today then with a hymn verse, it kind of sums all that up, and you segued into it really nicely. So thank you. Let's close with the hymn verse then, please. Let us suffer here with Jesus, to his image e'er conform. Heaven's glory soon will please us, sunshine follow on the storm. Though we sow in tears of sorrow, we shall reap in heavenly joy. And the fears that now annoy shall be laughter on the morrow. Christ, I suffer here with thee. There, O share thy joy with me. Amen.
Amen.
a note about the blue sheet of paper. If you want to jot any comments or any suggestions to the Board of Adult Discipleship on women's Bible studies, what you'd like to see, what you enjoy about it already. I don't know any of your handwriting, so if you want it to be anonymous, you don't have to worry about that. If you don't want to do that today, you can email me and I'll pass those. I'll just kind of compile things that come to me and then I'll pass it along to the board. But I've really enjoyed, I like these classes. I think they're really nice. I'm glad that they still do them. So thank you for coming. And I do too. Yeah. So thank you
thank you very much.
Thank you, sure. Have a good Sunday.
Kenny also.
Yes. Yes. Yep.